Oh, it must be Tuesday again. It's Inside Florida Racing on the Real Racing USA Networks. And tell you what, very interesting show tonight. I don't know how we could have topped it, but we did, Jack. I mean, last week, opening it up with Gary Ballou. And coming in here tonight, we've got Ronnie Bacello. Going to talk about the Hialeah Speedway reunion. And also in the house with us tonight, Mr. Jack Duffy, the man, the myth, the legend. So got a big show lined up for tonight. Going to be a lot of fun. A few things to talk about. A lot of stuff going on in Florida racing that we're going to get to here in just a little bit. And yep. What's that, bud?
Well, you know, Jason, if you remember, Gary Ballou was kind of hemming and hawing about whether he was maybe too old to go out. So we figured we'd just top him a little bit. Huh?
We'd one-up him.
We'd one-up him. But I am Jack Smith here with Racing Jason Beckner. The voice of the South, eh? No doubt about that.
I'm the suitcase Jake of announcers, I guess. Yeah, but, you know, if you want to get a hold of us tonight, very easy to do, Karnak@Comcast.net, or you can get us on Twitter, Real Racing USA, or you can actually text myself, and we'll get your questions out there at 239-645-5858. Once again, you can text me with your questions at 239-645-5858. And also, I think
you could text us at 941-228-8359 also. So there we go.
So a lot of stuff been happening inside Florida racing all around the state. One of the things I haven't even touched on this yet, Jack, with you, and didn't even bring it up because I wanted your opinion on it right off the bat. I went out this weekend on Sunday and watched my little nephew race. He's 6 years old. They race go-karts down there in Immokalee. And a gentleman came up to me, and we're sitting there watching the kids race. And it's something that's been touched on quite a bit in racing lately. And how young is too young to start your kids in racing? And my feelings alone are, well, I don't think too young is too young. I mean, you know, our kids start playing soccer, baseball, football at 5 and 6 years old. Why can't these young kids start racing? I don't think it's irresponsible for the parents to go out there and let the kids start racing as long as they follow all the guidelines, all the safety precautions, just like you would do with soccer or baseball or football. You know, kids have gotten hurt, and God forbid, yet some of them have gotten killed. And the gentleman brought up the point from last August up in Indianapolis, the young 13-year-old, I got his name written down here, Peter Lenz, was involved in a motorcycle racing accident in Indianapolis, which he passed away due to his injuries. It was a freak accident. But what's your feelings on that, Jack, on these young kids coming into racing?
Well, I think it's great. And I think that as long as, you know, as we've had to point out, when racetracks, especially short tracks, which sometimes are a little, they tend to be, sometimes they get a little deficient in the safety. But when you have kids, then you got to up the ante, I think, because of the potential, you know, you want to make sure people are safe. And as long as the safety factors are taken care of, I mean, because that's the way, like you said, in baseball, football, you know, all the sports. And, you know, football is every bit as dangerous as racing, especially today. And I think it's cool, man. I think, you know, and it's a good time, obviously, for families to do family things together, which you can never have too much of that.
Yeah, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly on that. I think the most irresponsible thing that the parents are doing nowadays is not spending time
Absolutely.
With their kids.
Absolutely.
And what a great way for them to do it. But coming up here in just a little bit, we're going to give Ronnie Bacello a call. There's somebody that we haven't heard from in a long time, and he kicked it around down at Hialeah for many, many years. We got to race against him over here at Charlotte and over at Hialeah a little bit. So that was going to be real interesting to see what Ronnie's up to and what he's got in store for the reunion for Hialeah.
Yeah, and that is the reason that we're talking to Ronnie tonight is this upcoming reunion for Hialeah Speedway. It's just going to be a very special event. They got a lot of old timers coming, and I know I was there, and I repeat this a lot, but I was there the final night that Hialeah raced, and it was one of the most memorable racing events I've ever been to. I mean, 7,000 people, and the place was packed. There was cars. They didn't have enough pits, and it had rained that day, and the parking lot was a pond, and they had to have special police forces out there to take the traffic was backed up for the speed from the speedway for a couple of miles. It was just it was insane. It was too cool.
I actually made a trip over to Hialeah a while ago for some drag racing. We drove down to where the old Hialeah Speedway was, and it was kind of sad coming around the corner down there, and then there stood Jimmy Johnson's sponsors, Lowe's, and it was just kind of unbelievable, kind of surreal, you know, especially when it hits that close to home.
Well, and we had a nice thing happen. It was, what, I guess it was 2 years ago. I think it was in 2008. It might have been 2007, but whatever the case, Applebee's called me from their corporate headquarters, and I'm like, what's this about? And they were looking for stuff to put in at Applebee's down in Hialeah, because they built an Applebee's right in the plaza there where the where the racetrack was, and they wanted to theme it because that's what Applebee's does. They like to – it's the neighborhood restaurant.
Right.
So they like to theme things. So we supplied them with the help of Rex Hollinger. We got together, supplied them with all kinds of old pictures and new pictures, you know, and apparently – I haven't seen it, but I've talked to people who've been there. Apparently they have a really cool thing in there with murals on the wall that's made up of all these old photographs from the days when the track was open.
I'll have to make it a point to
pretty
go down
cool.
there, because we make some runs over there once in a while. I have to make it a point to go down there and eat good in the neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly.
Take some pictures of it. But one thing, well, I kind of want to plug it before we start really getting into it here. Coming up this weekend, Hendry County Motorsports Park. It is a big double weekend day of racing, Friday night and Saturday night. It's the United Dirt Late Model Challenge Series is going to be in town, and they're getting ready to wind up their chase for the championship. Also, they're going to be racing. They're going to be having their test and tune on Friday night for the United Dirt Late Model Challenge Series and the Open Wheel Modified. It's going to be a back-to-back show with the big dogs out there. On Friday night, going to be running the pure stocks and the street stocks and also the mini stocks. And they will also be running again on Saturday night, along with the United Dirt Late Model Challenge Series and the Open Wheel Modified. So big 2 days of racing out in the dirt in the swamp in Clewiston. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And what you got queued up over there, Jack?
Well, I was just looking at some things that happened this past weekend in around the state of Florida. And there were some interesting things. You know, people can we're going to have Wayne Anderson on our show here in the next few weeks. I think 2 or 3 weeks from now.
The winningest driver in the late model series.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, people complain. You know, I've heard complaints. I'm sure people – I don't read the message boards too much these days, but I'm sure it's been talked about that Wayne runs in his own series and wins races and all that. But, you know, he and his dad at least had the cojones. They went out on a limb and they started a series when there wasn't one. And they've looking at the car counts throughout the year. And they've actually done very, very good. I mean, they've brought a lot of cars to the racetracks, and they put on some good shows. I mean, they brought 18 late models to Columbia Motorsports Park, which for that place, a great racetrack. It just happens to be far out of the – it's out on the perimeter, so to speak. It's not anywhere near the center of the state, and it's a long haul. And they had 18 cars, and Wayne did win that event. But just looking over the series, they've actually done pretty good this year, and we're going to talk to Wayne just before their final race of the year and see what he has what his thoughts are on the whole deal. But dude, Teat, back in the winner's circle, he actually beat Dave Steele.
Steele. He beat Steele
at DeSoto.
Really?
They had 16 cars there. That was pretty cool.
Jack's like, good job.
Tim Russell, no surprise there. Won a super late model, or I guess it's, I don't know if it's super late models or whatever, they call them late models, at Auburndale, but they had 21 cars in that field, and that's a good thing. Corey Abbott, they had 21 legend cars at Auburndale.
Wow.
That's a good thing.
Now, I think that was, now wasn't that, I think that Legends, I think that race was carried over from the one at Charlotte that got rained out.
Could have been.
Yeah, I think that was their national qualifier, yeah.
And the Top Gun Sprint Car Series, which is run by our friend Don Ream, at the behest of the track owners who actually got together and put that series together. Hint to asphalt track promoters who are going to have a meeting on October the 4th. That's something to look at. You know, they put that Top Gun Sprint Car Series together to try to revitalize dirt sprint cars racing in Florida, and I think it's done pretty good. Danny Martin Jr. won at Volusia, had 15 cars in the feature, which is down a little bit. I believe they usually have a few more than that, but whatever the case. Kyle Bronson and Jeff Matthews ran 1-2 in the dirt modifieds at Ocala on Friday night, and they had a big field of cars in that deal, too.
Since Ocala's gone to dirt and done that Friday night thing, it's been like night and day.
Yeah.
Night and day.
Well, and they only have like four classes of cars running on any given night. And they have Scott Moore's won the Thunderstocks there, 23 car field.
You can't go if you're not doing anything on a Friday night, you gotta head to Ocala. Yeah.
And on the last day of summer, that's all the news I have.
The last day of summer.
The last day of summer, 2010.
And we're just heating up down here, I'm telling you. Especially with the racing. You start getting into the cooler weather down here. Everybody starts tweaking all the motors, trying to lean them out, trying to get to that season-end championship. But I was looking through Carnac's website. Jeff Schofield in practice up there, he had a really nasty wreck for that Columbia race. Yeah, he was in Dickey's 92 car and just destroyed it. I mean, there's a picture on there. On the message board, it totally wiped out the whole right side of the car. I mean, it just shaved it off. I'm pretty nasty looking wreck.
Oh, I was going to call Dick today. I'm glad I didn't. Yeah, he's probably not real happy about all that.
No, because definitely looks like they're going to have to build a completely new car.
You know, that's a racetrack there. I mean, it is. It's a great late model track. I wish it was closer to us because it's a 4.5 hour drive for me.
That's a haul.
It's a haul.
Especially now.
Well, yeah, we don't even want to go there. But, do you have anything else? Are we going to go to break, come back with Ronnie?
No, I think we'll go to break. We're going to give Ronnie Bisello a call, get on the horn with him, find out what he's been up to and what he has in store for the Hialeah reunion.
And send us your questions for the man, Jack Duffy.
And also, if you have any questions for Ronnie Bisello, too, once again, you can get a hold of us at Carnac@comcast.net or Twitter at Real Racing USA. Or you can text myself at 239-645-5858. That's 239-645-5858. Or you can also text us at
941-228-8359. Do it today, not on Saturday.
No, right now. Yeah. No, I get some texts on Saturday, boy, especially
before
when I'm announcing.
Before we go to break, let's just run that. Let's talk about that just for a minute. We can do this. You know, 2 years ago, I was standing in the tower at Henry County Motorsports Park, and it was the night of the United Dirt Late Model Challenge Series event. There was a lot of people there. There was probably, for that place, a lot of people. There was about 800 people or so there. It was packed.
Yep.
And a full field of late models. There was 25 cars there or whatever. It was a great night, and had some modifieds there or something else. It was a good night of racing sitting up there, right? And I was standing up there, and I noticed all these people sitting around the doing things on and with and to their phones, you know? And I thought, holy cow. So I said, I think it was Bill Green.
It was Bill.
Bill. Yep. I said, Bill, we're going to do a new thing called Text the Tower. And if you haven't tried this, if you're an announcer or a promoter and you haven't tried this at your track, I'm telling you, this is kick ass here. We gave out my cell phone number to text the tower. And if you want to, give a shout-out to your girlfriend's birthday or, you know, you have questions about drivers out on the track or, you know, anything at all you want to ask, if you want to call and complain about the call because you think the flagman's a jerk, go for it. You know, do it. So within 30 minutes, we had about 40 calls or something. I mean, 40 text messages coming. They were coming in so fast and furious, it was a hard time to keep up with them. And then I know Bill took that. Did the same thing up in Georgia at a couple of tracks he was at with similar kind of success because it really created an interactivity between the fans and
the show. Yeah.
And now you have done this yourself. You tried this out, right?
You came to me and told me about it after you guys did it over there at Hendry when I was still announcing at Charlotte. And I've had so much fun anywhere I go with it. It does. It adds so much more. It makes it's like you said, it does make everybody feel like they're part of the show, especially when you start talking about them. And you'll have fans that right in the middle of the race, they'll text you, and yeah, my favorite driver's in second, or my favorite driver's in the back of the pack. You see, making a move to the front, or anything like that, you know. Or I've even had texts up to the tower for things that I've missed during the race. You know, car number 34, their right rear tire is glowing red. Their brakes are locked up on the car, and he's still out there running. Stuff that I've missed that the fans bring to my attention, too.
Right.
And, you know, makes them feel like they're part of the action also.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool deal. Huh?
It's fun. It is more fun. If you're an announcer and you're out there listening, or if you're one of the track owners, just tell your announcer, whoever's on the microphone, to do that, you know. And, I mean, texting.
Now, it does help if you have two people, because it can get a little, if you got a big crowd, it could get airy.
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah. I mean, I've got one of them big screen phones, you know, and I'm sitting right there trying to announce, flip through it and go everything else. And they maxed me out one night. They maxed me out. Yeah. I mean, I had to erase everything so I could get more texts. But it definitely adds to the show. It's a lot of fun. You get the crew members from the pits.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I hope you didn't make that call on coming up there after the races type text and everything.
Good stuff, though.
It's fun. It's fun.
All right. We'll be right back here on Inside Florida Racing. Bad things do happen to good people. It's a sad fact of life. Sometimes you just have to have an attorney to represent you or your family. I recommend attorney Timothy M. Grogan. Timothy Grogan is a Florida-based lawyer with offices in St. Petersburg, Venice, and Bradenton. Attorney Timothy Grogan's firm provides the skill and knowledge you deserve with legal representation in the areas of criminal defense, bankruptcy law, foreclosure protection, real estate law, and family law. www.timothygrogan.com for the office nearest you. Remember, bad things do happen to good people. When you need an attorney, I recommend Timothy Grogan. www.timothygrogan.com.
Carnac.com, your online racing community since 1997. Carnac.com is racing classifieds, racing photos, racing news, lively racing message boards, chat rooms, multimedia, and so much more. And if your race team or racing business needs a website, or your website needs a fire lit under it, look no further than Carnac.com. From affordable web hosting to fancy flash animation, Carnac gets it done.
The future of medicine is happening now. Utopia Wellness in Clearwater, Florida is a leading-edge medical center that offers integrative, holistic, patient-focused medical treatments. Utopia offers a full menu of wellness programs that complement each other by addressing all the issues related to well-being. Programs at Utopia Wellness are designed for anyone who wants to enjoy optimal health. Whether you're suffering from a chronic illness or simply wanting to prevent disease, Utopia has a personalized program that is right for you, including alternative cancer therapies, chronic degenerative illnesses, heart and vascular disease, immune system enhancement, detoxification and colon therapy, and medical weight loss. I invite you to call 727-799-9060 or visit utopiaawaits.com. That number again is 727-799-9060. My name is Jack Smith, and I highly recommend Utopia Wellness.
Inside Florida Racing. What is that, CCR there, Jack, you were playing?
Little CCR.
Little CCR, man. Tell
Tombstone
you what.
Tombstone Shadow.
Good Tuesday evening to everybody. This is Inside Florida Racing on the Real Racing Networks. And on the phone with us right now, and contrary to popular belief, he is alive, Mr. Ronnie Bacello, Mr. Hialeah himself. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing good. How you guys doing down there?
Not too bad, man. Long time, no talk. I know I talked to you just briefly there a while back on the old Facebook deal. But, man, it's good to hear from you, bud.
Yeah, good to talk to you guys, too. It's been a while since I've been down there in that neck of the woods.
Yeah, you up there where it actually gets cold and has some snow once in a while, right? Where are you at exactly?
I'm actually in Concord, just a little bit north of Charlotte.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, you're right.
You're in Madhouse country.
Definitely, right there in the heart of all of it. So what you been up to these days? What you doing up there?
Oh, just a little bit of sign work here and there, and working real hard on getting this Hialeah Speedway reunion off the ground for its first inaugural event. They had a small one down in Miami Springs, but this one's going to be at a larger scale.
You know, we were just sitting here. We were talking before we came back to you a little bit ago about how the Applebee's down in where the track used to be had their corporate headquarters called Jack Up. And was looking for memorabilia, put photos and stuff of the old Hialeah Speedway to put up in the Applebee's down there.
Yeah, I heard about that. I haven't seen it. I heard it's a little small section in that Applebee's. I took a tour through the parking lot, and that was about all I could take.
Yeah, I know the feeling. I've done it myself, my friend. Done it myself. They're few and far between anymore. And but, you know, we're going to try to get everybody back together. What is going to be the date for the Hialeah reunion, and where do you guys plan on doing it, and who do you look at coming down for it?
It's scheduled to be the Saturday after Thanksgiving, November 27th. It will be held in Kissimmee, Florida, at the Ramada Inn Celebration Resort. We have an advance ticket price, and we also have a at-the-door price. If anybody decides they want to do at-the-door, we really do need a head count for the food. It will be a buffet-style dinner.
And what do you guys have on plan for it? I mean, what are some of the things you guys are going to be bringing up? Is it just going to be a social event? Have you got special people that are going to be coming out of the woodwork for it?
Yeah, I've probably talked to, in the last 6 months, I've probably talked to more people than I've talked to in the last 30 years. Some people I never even met before, but I had stories where guys would say that they quit racing in 1965, which was the year I was born. But they're still alive, and they were very interested in hearing about the reunion. Herb Tillman, the first guy to ever win a feature at Hialeah Speedway, has purchased his tickets, going to be on hand. We're planning a autograph session with about 10 or 12 of the old-timers, like Herb Tillman, Bobby Brack, Bobby Coyle, Rojero, the Griffins, Ballou, the Barnwells, just some of the oldies but goodies. And we even contacted the infamous Joe Winchell to see if he could make that autograph session as well.
Speaking of Joe Winchell, you know, the last night down there, Herb Tillman presented, Joe won the late model event, and Herb Tillman presented him with the trophy.
I heard about that. Unfortunately, I was unable to make it down there. I'll regret the rest of my life.
maybe we could get Joe to bring the trophy with him.
He might be able to do that. I'm sure if we asked him nice enough, he'd do it.
If anybody wanted any more information about it, do you guys got a website set up, or can they contact you, or how do they get a hold of you?
Yep, they can either contact me at my business in Concord, or they can go on to HialeahSpeedwayReunion.com and enter in their name, address, and contact information, and I will mail out them a postcard. Anyone that receives that postcard in the mail will also receive a ballot. We're going to do a Hialeah Speedway Hall of Fame. We got about 200 named nominees that we're actually choosing from. And there'll be 25 names on the ballot, and 10 of those will be inducted into the Hall of Fame, and they won't be revealed till we get to the reunion.
Oh, wow. So just contacting you, is that the only way? Is there a website up or anything like that?
Yeah, just the website, the HialeahSpeedwayReunion.com is where they get to put in their information. If they're on Facebook, we have a reunion group page. They can go through that, or I can give them my phone number and address and information up here where I'm at. They can contact me here, and I'm here from 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, and that's Signs Fast is the name of the business. The phone number is 704-786-7446.
tell us about the event. What give us an idea of what the event's going to be like.
We are planning on having it videotaped, thanks to you and Karnak and your great bunch. But the biggest thing is just getting all these people together, haven't seen each other in many, many years, for a social event, as well as an autograph session, the Hall of Fame, some music, dancing, and just a big get-together, basically. There will be some memorabilia. I've had several calls from a lot of people that are going to bring old programs, pictures, trophies. There'll be an area for them to display those with somebody that's going to watch them to make sure they don't get carried off by anybody. But it's just going to be basically a big social event.
Any race cars coming out?
We actually have got an okay from Buddy Griffin. He has his old Chevelle that they replicated that he's been running around New Smyrna at Speed Weeks. He is going to have that inside the room with us.
Oh, too cool, too cool. You know, I met you a long time ago. You guys had come over to Charlotte and were running that that three car over there for a while. But it wasn't until a few years later that I even realized, or it was even brought to my attention, that you guys were from the Hialeah area. How many years did you run over there?
I started racing Hialeah in 1983. And I probably ran up until, the last race I won was in 2000.
Now, weren't you involved more with the track besides racing at one point in time?
When I was in my younger days going to school, I actually worked at the track doing cleanup after school. That's how I got my foot in the door. And then I started racing. I probably raced as much as I got thrown out of there. I was living in North Carolina in 1999, and Ron Kayuk, 98, 99, Ron Kayuk, who had paid the taxes and took over the track, had contacted me about coming in to help him run it, and I actually managed the track for 2 years.
Man, I've got some of your radios, man.
What's that?
I've actually got some of the old Hialeah radios. The officials' radios. They were actually part of the Hendry County Motorsports Park now, but
awesome.
Yep. So when I ran across that, I was like, man, I got to get a hold of Ronnie. And then, lo and behold, you guys are putting this Hialeah reunion together. You said you were talking to Bobby Brack. He's going to be coming in for it.
Yeah, Bobby Brack. The entire Brack family. Bobby, his wife Pat. His son Keith, his son Steven, and their entire families will be there on hand. I'd actually even mentioned to Jack about possibly having Bobby Brack do a call-in sometime between now and then, and he has accepted and said he would love to do it. He is one of the icons from that track, as you might say it. He was dubbed the king, and I don't know all the stats, but I just know that he sent me a story and about 31 pictures to back it up.
That's cool.
He won a bunch of races there.
Yeah, during the month of October and November leading up to the event, we'll have several people on who were heroes from that time when the track was 50 some years.
A long time.
Yeah. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I have a T-shirt framed. I have a in my family room. I have a framed T-shirt from that last night that has the.
Do you hear that?
Yeah, I do hear that. You can't hear that, Ronnie, but I have a wolf, and she is howling outside the studio as we speak.
I thought something was wrong.
Anyway, leading up to the event, we're going to have several guests on, and we'd love to have Bobby Bragg. That'd be wonderful, and some of the other guys that raced there back in the day, and. You know, there's so many people. I mean, it's just an unbelievable. Of course, Dick Anderson, one of the people that newer folks in Florida racing are familiar with, came from there. But
I remember we went to Hialeah and raced there one time, and it was like I just remember going down the track and going down into the corner, and I thought I was going to drop off the face of the earth.
Yes.
I mean, was there actually, negative camber in those corners?
Yes, inverted.
they always said there was.
I swear. That's the way it looked. That's the way it looked. I'll tell you, Ronnie, we're going to run, but listen, man, give out that information again, how people can contact you.
They can contact me at my business in Concord, North Carolina at Signs Fast. The phone number is 704 786-7446, or they can go to HialeahSpeedwayReunion.com and enter their name, address, and contact info, and we'll get them a postcard out so they don't miss out.
That's right. And if you have problems with all that, just contact Karnak, and we'll turn you on to Ronnie. So there you go. We'll talk to you really soon, man. Keep it up. Keep going.
All right, guys. I appreciate it.
No problem, Ronnie. Take care of yourself, bud.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
You too.
Right. Bye-bye. All
right. Oh, man.
And we are going to do, as addition, there will be a video available. We're going to broadcast live from there, too, and do some interviews with all these guys the night of the event.
Can I go?
Oh, absolutely. Because, you know, when we did the Sunshine Speedway reunion, that was like 1,800 people turned out down there, and that was just unbelievable. I mean, it was...
You guys did that up at... that was the...
was that a Quaker Steak and Lube up in St. Pete or Pinellas Park?
Yeah.
You know? And that was pretty much fun.
Yeah, you can still go back online and see all them pictures and everything. Yeah. That was such a great turnout for that.
Yeah, it was awesome, man. So let's take a break, and we're going to come back and talk to...
The legend.
A race car driver, for real.
Right. Jack Duffy up next on Real Racing USA.
Now I'd like to introduce a very popular group called the Grassroots. They don't have a manager. They have a gardener. But they sing great. Ladies and gentlemen, the Grassroots.
When I think of all the worries people seem to find, and how they're in a hurry to complicate their minds by chasing after money and dreams that can't come true, I'm glad that we are different. We've better things to do. May others plan their future. I'm busy loving you. As long as I'm with you, we'll take it nice and easy and use my simple plan. You'll be my loving woman, I'll be your loving man. We'll take the most from living, have pleasure while we can.
And we're back here inside Florida Racing. That's okay, man. That's
Might help if I turn it back on.
And that was Jimmy Durante introducing the Grassroots, believe it or not.
Thank you very much.
1969 or somewhere back then.
You know, somebody that's in the studio right now with us might know him. No, I'm going to be in so much trouble. Right now with
us. He does know him.
Does he really?
Sure he does.
Did I miss something?
Yes.
In the studio with us live, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Jack Duffy. And Jack, how you doing, bud? I know you got banged up there a couple weeks ago over at Charlotte, and You got a microphone right there next to you, bud.
Yeah. Yeah, that would help if we set you up there.
But is he on? Nope. There we go. Now we're on. But, yeah, you got banged up pretty good there a couple weeks ago over in Charlotte. And still got the cast there on your hand.
Yeah, I'm going to take it off this Friday and then put another one on after they examine it. And I had a pretty good concussion. They said it was slight, but you should have seen it from this side. You know, if my eyes were red from that side, you should have saw it from this side. And it's a little punchy, you know, for a while. And it's much better now. I got to rest some, you know.
Yeah. But, I was there that night. Yeah, you took a wild ride. I've seen you take a couple wild rides out there. And, you know, it's really hard to believe. I mean, just I'm not even going to ask you your age. I've been asking you for years, and you keep lying to me. But you've been at this for 60 years, and really, you don't look a day past 55, 60.
I'm not giving any out Corvettes, now, if that's what you're trying to do. I won't get you a new Corvette. But thanks. That's nice to hear, because sometimes somebody fixes me up with a date, you know, and she's very beautiful, and I'll say, want to go home with me? And she'll say, where, the old age home? So that was a compliment that you just gave me.
Well, I tell you what, it definitely is a compliment. I've been watching your race here in Florida. I mean, ever since the TQ Midget started coming to Charlotte County.
Right.
And my dad always preached on me, you know, you got to root for the old guys because the young kids are coming up. And I love seeing the old guys beat up on the young boys out there, man. And you are absolutely as tough as they come when it comes to race car drivers. I've seen you flip them over at Charlotte and never get out of the car, put me back on my wheels. They push start you and you get out there and you come back and you give it every single lap. I mean, just, and it's really amazing. And it's been a joy watching you race.
Well, thank you. Sometimes we can get at them, you know, and sometimes you're hurt and you don't say it. I had 30 hospitals and 10 concussions. The doctor was quite mad at me the other day and said, this is it, no more hits in the head. And maybe it's time to walk away from it, I don't know. But, you know, I don't believe it. Nobody believes it, and not bragging at all, but it's fun to beat the kids, and as long as they be competitive. You know, if I banged my head on a tree next year and was sitting under an orange tree over there like Mrs. Bates down in the cellar in a Psycho movie when they discovered me, and they go, well, that was great. He was working. So if I hit my head doing something I love to do, that's my choice. When the doctor said, no more hits in the head, I don't know if he meant his head or my head. So I don't know what I'm going to do.
Well, I hope it's not the last we see of you this year. I can't wait to see you race again. But five championships with the FMARA here in Florida.
Right.
And
In the last eight years. And yeah, I'm kind of proud of that.
Yeah. You started racing up in the New Jersey area, correct?
I started in Wise Glass Stadium in Staten Island with the more or less jalopy cars. And then I went to NASCAR and Snyder and everybody was there. And the first night I rode New Egypt Speedway in New Jersey. It was a little dusty bowl, and they put telephone poles laying horizontal around the track and passed the hat around after the race. And Charlie Birdsall and Al Pomponio was there. And then you could go to Walt's, because New Jersey had to be 21.
Right.
So I had the gal that raised me, whose name was Duffy, that's not my legal name, but she signed a paper so I could race at 18, which was 1950. So I went there, and then went over to Walt's Stadium, and it had asphalt straightaways and dirt turns. It wasn't even finished yet. And so we'd go there, and they'd pass the hat around, and you got some money. But you could run, you know, with a stock motor, which I'd go down to Mikey Nick's junkyard, and he'd give me a motor. You know what I was doing with it, and I'd take it back the next week, say it was no good. And he said, that's okay, go in a pile and get another one. But we were racing, you know. And how I got the first car, I fell out of my buddy's car in New Jersey on a highway and went sliding down the road and got all scraped up. And after he said, sue me and we'll split the money. I said, okay. So I sued him, I split the money. I got $600. That was more money than I ever saw one time in my whole life at that time, you know. And I bought my first race car with it and went to New Egypt, and I was racing. Then we went to Wise Glass Stadium because I went to Morristown, and my hero at that time, Wally Campbell, was there, and Frankie Snyder and all. And they had the three carburetors and the alcohol, and I came with this thing that we jacked the roof out with a bumper jack when we bought it. And I actually had to have a light car to have any money. So we took down the uprights for television antennas that were on top of apartment houses. We stole one, and we bent it and put that in there. around the edge of the door and painted it black. That was our roll bar. And
had to get it any way you could.
But boy, they blew me off there, Marston. I said, this isn't a place to go, you know. So I went to Wise Glass, and with a stock motor and with a low gear, you can get around. And I did very well. I won a lot of races there. And then I got interested in the full midgets, and the TQs came along. I was offered a ride, and I won the heat in the semifinal. And the second in the feature, I got spun out on the last corner on the last lap in the TQ, and I fell in love with it. So I always did well in those. But my real heart is the full midgets, and there's nothing like sitting in a modified with a 454 in Nazareth, Pennsylvania, and that thing just rumbling under, you know, like a monster. It's hard to beat. I love it.
Just ready to come alive.
I'd still run a late model or something, but it's late. Who the hell am I kidding, you know?
How did you get sucked into racing? I mean, what was the moment when you showed up at a racetrack or you saw a race car? What was it that went, I've got to do that?
Well, when I was young, you know, I remember selling papers, and I sound like Rocky Graziano, but at one time I sold the papers and set up bowling pins, and they go, what's that? And it put food on the table. And no regrets, okay? Mm-hmm. I loved it. And not at that time, but I learned an awful lot. And I'd pick up Life magazine, and the back would be Walter Eddie Ader with the yellow number 3 stock car with Camel cigarettes. And I saw that thing, you know. And then I got interested in racing. I wanted to be a Marine fighter pilot. I wanted to shoot down all the Japanese, right? Because when I was selling papers, and I actually, you know, picked up the paper in December 7th, 41 and stuff, that's what I wanted to do. And I started looking at the race cars. And then I get somebody to take me to Paterson, New Jersey after the war. When Schindler and Ritter and all them guys were driving, I loved Johnny Ritter with the little yellow number 3 with the outboard. And I'd ride in somebody's rumble seat up there and watch the races. And truthfully, you had to, on a Tuesday night at Paterson, the line went around that place 4 times. It was like going to an Elvis Presley concert. You couldn't get a seat by 4 o'clock on Tuesday and Fridays. And Schindler was there with the one-leg driver, you know, and I loved Ritter and Dutch Schaefer and Bonadias and all them guys that I later got to actually race with. And I fell in love with the midgets, and that's what I want to do now. Bill Schindler won 54 main events in 1946. Himself, that's how many races they had. 7 nights a week. 80 cars in the pits. I get a photograph in Frank Smith's photo studio for 25 cents. Go down and Ritter would sign it or Schindler would sign it. I still have them. And so they would pay those guys a lot of money to keep them at their particular track. People made $37 a week in those days. And they got the back gate went to the club.
Yeah.
In the stands, you got 40% of the gate. That was the purse. And not to mention what they paid Schindler and Ritter and Schaefer and Duncan and Bonadiz. You know, Duncan's job during the war was driving Truman around. That was his job.
Right.
And it was a lot of money. So then in 1950, now Schindler won 53 main events in 46, 54 in 47, 53 in 48. In 49, a bunch of stock cars came up there and put on a show. In 1950, ARDC with the midgets had 13 total races the year that Nicky Fenora, my buddy, was champion. And then that's when I started. So the midgets were out.
Right.
So stock cars, right? And I ran Wise Glass and all and got to the midgets and drove with the same guys, you know, that were my idols.
Did you know Ed Otto?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he used to fly at the heyday of the midgets.
Uh-huh.
He had a DC-3, and he would fly his popular drivers from Paterson to Buffalo to run the next night with a DC-3.
Yeah, we interviewed his son about an hour a couple years ago after his son had written a book about him.
Oh, yeah, I got the book.
Yeah.
But Ed would come into Mattega's garage. It was Andretti's first ride. And Willie Mattega and Eddie Mattega. And I drove for him a couple of times. And they're in New Jersey, and I stopped and see them. Well, Willie died 2 years ago, and Eddie took it very bad. But he was friends, and Otto used to come in there, and he had a big cigar, you know, and he'd go in there, hey, Willie, how you doing, Willie? You know, and he'd talk like a gangster.
Is he a bigger-than-life kind of character?
Oh, yeah, big, tall guy. Had a big, bad limp on him.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, and you know, everybody was always, hey, don't pay enough, this and that, you know. But Otto actually was good to the drivers.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking a little bit earlier before we came on the air, and we were talking about the car that you're driving now, mm-hmm. and it was kind of a neat story how you got hooked back up. That was one of your first rides that you won a 100-lapper with, correct?
No, that was the 3 car.
That was the 3 car.
The little 3 car that's going to go into, well, 99%, we were up in my buddy Crocky Wright, who was a writer, and they put his ashes around Lattimore Valley four weeks ago in Pennsylvania. So I drove up to Virginia and drove up with my friend Steve, who's the son of the guy that I sold the original number three to.
Mm-hmm.
But I was racing in Freeport, Long Island, 1961, and I had troubles with my owner. And owners and drivers never really got along 100%, you know. One time I ran over one of my owner's drivers in a pits, coming into the pits of Wall Stadium, when he had the big cast on his leg. I wrote on it with a magic marker. I finally got me a car owner. Well, he didn't get mad. He laughed like hell at me, but everybody else thought it was funny, you know. But anyway, I was racing for Zirinsky, who I drove for on one lot of red. One only race in Madison Square Garden, the Tony Bonadio's 100-lap Memorial, Atlantic City, and 100 laps, 75 lappers with the TQs in those days, and we had a fight. So this guy had this beautiful black number one with a gold splash on it, with the number one in it. And he got a hold of me. He said, "You want to drive for me?" I said, "No." He says, "Why?" I said, "Because you got Jerry Carl in the car, who eventually went to Indianapolis." I said, "I want to drive the car." He said, "Well, I'm going to fire him." I said, "I still won't drive it. You shouldn't do that." So he said, "Well," he called me the next day. He said, "I fired him. Will you drive for me now?" I said, "No, you shouldn't have done that." He said, "Well, he would do it to you." I said, "I don't work that way." So the next day he called me. He said, "You got to drive in Vic Novell's car. You got to ride in there. Now will you drive it?" I said, "Yeah." So I got in a Friday night, and I won 100 lapper at Freeport, Long Island. That was 1962 with that little black number three, 1962, right? And I won a championship with it here. I bought the car through one way or another and put a cage on it, and I won a championship here with it in 2001.
I remember that. I remember that. And
then I built the number one, which I won a championship with in 02, 05, 08, and 09.
Now,
it was close this year until... You know, the thing bit me, so.
Well, we were talking earlier, the one car that you're driving now, you said that's getting ready to go to the Hall of Fame?
No, the three.
The three's
one
going to the Hall of Fame.
From 1961, yeah.
The car you have now, is that something that's been around for a while? Is that something you built?
It was around later. I saw, I'm starting to lose my mind a little bit here, getting tired.
That's what the doctor was talking about,
yeah,
getting hit on the head.
It'll go about 2 minutes, I'm sharp again, you know. But, I mean, like putting the milk in the cereal in the refrigerator, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
But maybe I was always that way. Maybe I'm normal. So
it's called selective memory.
Yeah, what's his name? Who was driving it? Ernie drove it a couple of times. And I can't remember. But anyway, the car late, I saw it run it at St. Pete years ago, and it was very light and really was great, you know. And anyway it got lost. Nobody could find it, and I found a thing when my buddy wanted to buy the three off me. So I bought the car. It was all apart, and he put it together, and we went out and we won a championship with it in 2002 with a Honda in it. And then they put the Suzuki in it, won a championship. No, I got a second that year and a second the next year, and I won it with an 05 and again an 08 and 09, and I was running second this year. I think Teddy, who's really coming along, I think he's going to go places. They got a super car, of course, with Louis Klaus, and so I wasn't too far behind him, you know. I think it was going to come down to which one of us wrecked or something. So so anyway, I'm not taking anything away from them. They're doing a hell of a job.
So what keeps you going at this? What keeps you going? It keeps you, you know, what's inside of Jack Duffy that makes you still
I don't know.
Want to go
it just
out
seemed like
it?
I never, it doesn't seem like this season is over and we're going to have another season next year. Just like it continues and I just kind of keep doing it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I never thought about anything like that until recently they start putting things in my head, you know, which they're probably right about, you know?
Yeah.
Jack is probably, I've probably interviewed him more in the winner's circle than any other driver at Charlotte County.
Well, you know, you can just
Punta Gorda Speedway.
You can just run too, but not what they used to call a grandstander, was it? Trying to win on the last lap. But I do plan races, and I seem to have had this thing. Well, that's why I was really good on the indoor tracks, the one Madison Square Garden, the Tony Bonadillas, Hunter Lapper. Remind me about Bonadillas in a minute. I always did well on those little small tracks, you know, and it would seem like situations would come up where there'd be a car here and a car there, one behind me, one over there, and it was almost like a basketball coach would bring up a plan, you know, when you got 2 seconds to go or something,
right.
Or something would flash on the screen, and I just seemed to do it instinctively, make the right move and set somebody up and maybe wait for like 2 laps to go, like that Winter National thing. I moved too soon on him. I would have had him. I let him know I was there, and I shouldn't have.
Oh.
But, you know, it's the whatever it is, it's easy. It's never hard. I come in, again, a lot of the young guys are sweated up. Their arms are tired. I don't get tired. I could go 100 laps. For some reason, I don't get tired. It's like something I never quit. I may have developed the muscles. You don't see too many on a wrinkly old guy, I probably have developed the muscles that you need to drive a race car.
Yeah.
And you do need some that people don't realize that you just don't ride around a circuit. Head weighs 35 pounds, your neck gets tired, you know, you get a kink down your left side, your arms get tired. I don't get tired for some reason. Now, maybe I couldn't throw a basketball at my age, but probably the fact that I never quit. I drove, this is 60 years, and I drove every year.
You never
quit and come back in 10 years and came back as an owner. I've never missed a race. Sick, cut up, stitched up, 200 stitches in my face and head alone all these years. I never missed a race.
Now let's back up here a minute. Now, I know that they have basketball games in Madison Square Garden.
Right.
They have boxing matches.
Mm-hmm.
They have all kinds of crazy things that crazy guy didn't have. Madison Square Garden was created by the
The old garden.
The showman. What? How many people would they put in there for racing?
We only had 6,000 people that night, which didn't look like anybody in that place.
Really?
Yeah. But we had...
they had the boards? They brought in boards?
No, they had the concrete. And the bad part was a lot of people knocked the show because I think the greatest midget driver to me was Johnny Coy. And... they figured he's going to win it, and Duncan was going to win it, you know, the legend at the time and everybody. And we planned on this thing for weeks before. We went over and practiced, and this one guy that used to build motors there was blind. And we were warming up, and he said,
wait a minute.
Well, no, he went blind. He built motors,
yeah.
And then he had a cataract, and they gave him the wrong medication that blinded him.
Oh, wow.
And Doug Craig, who was quite a TQ driver, a midget driver up north, used to help him and everything, and he would tell him what to do, and he was like his hands. And he sat in the stands up there, and we were warming up, and he said, there goes Rommet, and there goes Duncan. He could pick him out, and he said, okay, fellas, you might as well put your cars in the trailers because Duffy just went by. He's not cheating. I can smell that, but I can't see it, right? But you're not going to beat him. And they took the first 10 rows of the seats out, and they put on a concrete floor. Now that's where he used to have the hockey rink. And the night of the show... they didn't turn, the track was ice cold. It didn't make ice, but the track was ice cold, and you couldn't get no heat in the track. And the union wouldn't turn it off without paying them. Okay? So the track was ice cold, and we warmed up, and I wasn't getting any place all afternoon. And come the heat, we went out in the heat, and I had Johnny Coy and this kid from Ohio in the heat, and you had to get a third, and I got a third. And I told Louis, I said, I ain't getting around. And this girl, of course, was always in love with somebody, you know. And here was this girl, her father forbid me to see. She's in the stands, and then when the race was over, it was on the TV that showed on the news, and her father was going to absolutely kill me. And but I said, I got to win this race, you know. The blonde is in the stands, right, you know. So anyway...
I got to get the girl.
Louis goes out to the drugstore, and he come back with a box of razor blades. And he hacksawed a 2x4. We didn't have a Cyper, mm-hmm. even know what it was. We put the razor blades in 2x4 and Zerinsky and siped those tires. They looked like windshield wiper blades. If I went a mile an hour faster, I think they would have came apart. And I run that thing, and I won it, you know. And the last lap... the white flag lap, and coming out of the fourth turn, I looked up in the stands, And here was Louis with his head down between his knees with his hands over his head saying, you know, don't screw up, you know. and I won it, you know. But Bonadilla, as I mentioned, in 1958, I went to Providence, Rhode Island on a tiny indoor track with a car that this guy built in a cellar. He didn't have any money. He put it together in a cellar, and then he had to take it all apart to get it out of the cellar and then covered it up with a tarp. A nice old guy, his name was Johnny Watts, and he loved me, and he gave me a shot in this DQ. And we went to Providence, Rhode Island and towed up there, and it was cold out and everything, you know. And believe it or not, I don't know how I did it, but I'm leading this thing coming off the fourth corner with this thing with a little Tillotson carburetor on it, no cam, all this guy could afford. And I come off that fourth corner with a last lap. I see the checkered flag and got careful. And old Tony Bonadilla's, you give him an inch, it was all over. And he beat me by the grill in a car. And after the race, everybody's going around and they said, Tony, why you let the kid win the race? You got to win them all. You had to love Tony. He had the little pencil mustache. He was like a little barrel, a red and white suit. And on any track, especially short track, like Coy, he would have that left front wheel hanging over the corduroys, you know, on the inside. And you give him an inch, he's going in and he ain't coming out. And we had no roll bars, no cage, not even a roll bar, just the tail.
It was all open.
Down
yeah.
in the back of your, middle of your back. And so after the race, they go, Tony, why you let the kid win the race? You know? I mean, Tony says, hey, I don't give nothing away, number one. Number two, he's got 50 years to go racing yet. That's what he said. And now February was 60 years.
Wow. That's just too
good. Then cool. I won the when he got killed at Williams Grove, that race in Hempstead or Long Island was a 100-lapper. I won the memorial race for him. That meant a lot.
You know, you've touched on the 100-lapper. We've talked about what keeps you going. What is probably your most memorable moment racing your whole life? What is the one that just comes to your mind that you're most proud of?
Madison Square Garden was quite a race. And then I won a 100-lapper starting 33rd, you know, on a tiny track with you know, when the guys didn't have nothing to do, like Bonadillas or Duncan or all those legends, they'd run the TQs. And, you know, you had competition there. That was great. But I think the greatest thing happened, I mean, I got in the Hall of Fame up north, you know, and all that. But I think a lot of races, it's hard to say which one was great. I think running that coupe at Daytona, you know, was really something. When I looked, pulled in the pits there, and I looked around, I see Maynard Troyer's car, and all these things, they look like custom cars. I said, where am I? Where's the modified pits? They said, you're in them. I said, what? And they called that little coupe the Ugly Duckling, you know? And that thing went out and really got around it. That was a thrill, and I'll be honest with you. We ran a road course, and I said, they put a chicane in the backstretch. We were turning faster times than the Porsche 968s or whatever they were did to the road course. And on the straightaways, we were going to turn faster times than the Grand National cars, which is what, you know, your
which was the Cup Series now.
Right, now. And they put a chicane in the back and put us through a road course. And probably I think it's a good thing we were flying with those things. And it was just I was going around up on the banks up there. We're going so fast, I came out of the fourth corner, no radios, you know. We took a blackboard and we went to the hobby shop. We got, you know, a gilt for the kids to play with.
Yeah.
We put it all around the outside of the blackboard so it was shining the sun and pick them out. Because, like in the movies, Mickey Rooney waves, hey, what's going on in the pits? The pit wall there from up on the track coming out of the fourth turn, the dominant color is blue. So everything looked blue and white streaks to it. That's what people's heads. And you couldn't make out the blackboard. So I'd look up at the grants, look up at the tower coming out of the fourth turn, and I'd say, I took a look at the gauges, and I'd say the flag was green. And when Freddie Harbach spun in front of me, I saw smoke off his right rear. Whatever I did right. We were on 175 mile an hour. And I seen puff off his right rear wheel, and I said, that was Freddie. Not I'm coming up on Freddie. That fast. You know, it was thrilling. And I went riding around, going around the banks up there, and there's a story in Stock Car Magazine, 1974, and in July, they did a story on a car. And I couldn't believe, I said to myself, going around, I said, you know, this is the easiest thing I ever did, I swear to God. The toughest thing was that 100-lap race and winning a Bonadilla's Memorial in a garden from 33rd with the TQ. I said, these guys get paid for this? They're not beating their brains out on Saturday nights in a bull rings of Charlotte or wherever. You know, I mean, most of them. They knew somebody. They made a connection. And they started out over here. I said, they're going to make more money in one day, the Grand National cars, than I made my whole life. You know? And this is the easiest thing I ever did once you got used to the speed. I really believe that. But I think, other than that thrill there in the Bonadillas race, I think I loved Charlotte and becoming five-time champion. Maybe I'm a little fat-headed, but I'm proud of it. But I think the greatest thing other than that and the Hall of Fame award was they created this thing in a club called the Duffy Award about 10 years ago. And I guess they didn't see my picture in the post office because they think this is you know, not Arnold Palmer, but something. So we give it to somebody every year that we think is worthy of it. It's hard to say that because you sound conceited, you know. But it has someone, we want someone who does something for the club. And but it's not all of that. Otherwise, and again, I have to say, because people come out and say, well, I don't know about that guy. What did he really do for the club? And I have to say, it's not named what do you do for the club. It's called the Duffy Award. And I'm really proud of that.
Right.
And we give it to somebody that's we think is worthy. Ernie, we thought that he deserved it about three years ago. Yeah. And he absolutely balled up there when he got it. And it touched me. And so when we award it, I always kind of make up something and say something about him. And it's such a night for me. I'm so proud of that.
Too cool. And, well, of course, Ernie's still working with you, helping you in your car. He came out and ran it a couple weeks ago down there at Punta Gorda Speedway after you'd broken your wrist and your concussion and all that. Mm-hmm. And I got to talk to him down in the Winter Circle a little bit. I was over there hanging out. And he's a chef, or he's got a restaurant going on?
He has
on
a place called
the Roadside
Rib Shack in Sarasota, Florida. And they have all the baby back ribs and the chickens, and I get mad at him. I say, you got to come over. You want to drive this guy? You can come over and help? I say, you go over there getting them chickens dizzy spinning around in there? And, you know, but me and Ernie go back a long way. I saw him driving go-karts and kind of get him interested in TQs and set the car up for him and stuff. And he learned, and he listened, and you don't have to listen to me, but my record isn't too bad. And he listened, and he absorbs it, and he can see what you're telling him, and then he went off with the sprint cars and did a good job till he hurt his back. And if you don't like Ernie, you like anybody. I mean, there's not a bad bone in him.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And he one of the few, I don't need any pats on the back. I don't care. I help people, and that's what that Duffy's Award about is really the, no matter who it is, I'll tell him the truth. I'll tell him what gear I got. I'll tell him what the tire pressures are. A young kid over there, and Mike Elders, I took him under the wing there a bit, and I feel good doing it. And if you can beat me, beat me. But I'm not afraid to beat. I still think I got a couple of races left in me if I had the motor that somebody else has there that I don't have. But, I love them all. I mean, you know, whether the feeling is mutual or not, I love all these kids, all these drivers. I really do. Like brothers, and I'll help him anytime I can get. And Ernie absorbs it when you tell him. And that's what I love about him. He's in a car for me now, and we're going to try to survive some of the owner's points this year, but championship, any chance at it. And, of course, the guy that's leading it right now deserves it, Teddy Durfee. Hell of a driver. He's going to really amount to something if he wants to go further.
Hot dog.
He
gave himself that nickname the other night down there.
Oh, yeah.
He said it was.
And he came over to me. He said, you see me going to that guy coming off the fourth corner? You just see that? I said, yeah, I saw it. I said, you were on time. On time? I said, you was on time.
His dad was the pace car driver at DeSoto?
Yes.
Yeah. I remember when he started racing with you guys.
Yep. And Dude T, you mentioned before, I love Dude.
Yeah.
You know, we were together with the TQs way back. And I at one time I said to him, him and Ernie both. I said, the two of you are, well, I have to watch my language here, but I said, you have to, well.
Tell it like it is, Jack.
No, listen. I go to church every morning, every Sunday. I go early mass because in the afternoon I go to Ku Klux Klan meeting. So, you know, I don't want you to think bad of me, right? So I took.
Okay.
So anyway, I told both of them, you guys got to pack your bags and get out of here. You got to go to Indiana.
Yeah.
Get a job out there fixing go-karts. You got talent. Dude is super, you know. And Ernie, I said when I saw him in a go-kart, I said, you know, this guy needs a TQ. So I went over and I talked to him, and I said, I'm Duffy. You probably never heard of me, but he says, no. I said, you need a TQ. He says, what's that? And I told him about it. And I called Tony, who's a buddy of Stuart, who's not name-dropping, but we were very close, okay? And for another Duffy tale that you probably don't want to hear. But anyway.
Maybe we do.
I called him, and I had Ernie on the phone, and I said, you got a car up there, you know? And then I talked to his owner at the time. See, I'm losing a little bit now. But he used to do some motors for me, Larry DeWinger. He died with mad cow disease, and so did his father. And that's who was building stuff for Tony and got him started there. And this guy that we spread the ashes around 2 weeks ago, Clarky Wright, the author, the historian with auto racing, got Tony his first ride, and me and Clarky were very close. We used to come to my house for Thanksgiving and sit in a rocking chair there with a fireplace and stuff back in the 50s. And so I had to go to the ceremony 4 weeks ago at the museum. But I told Tony and talked to Larry DeWinger, and they sold him a car, and I worked together with Ernie, and he was rookie of the year and champion the first year. And I said at that time, then he asked me to go with him. Well, he went to a sprint, and he wanted to go out to the little 500, and he asked me to come with him, and I went out with him. And I'll tell you something, without exaggeration, I mean, I'm not saying who I am, okay, but I'm not blind. I've seen 200 guys come and go. I've seen 20 make it to the big time in my lifetime. I mean, big names. I've seen 5 amount to anything. And I say, Ernie is the best asphalt driver I ever saw. I believe if I am back there when I told him and T to pack your bags and go to Indiana, make an impression, try it for a year, somebody will pick you up. If you don't make it, you can come back to Florida, okay? But for one reason or another, they couldn't go anymore. And I was offered some fantastic rides that I don't want to mention. Back at one time, everybody thought I looked pretty good. In those days, there's a good chance I wouldn't be sitting here now or probably mangled. It was a rough business, okay? But I wish they had gone. I think Ernie and Dude could have really made it out there. And for one reason or other, everybody has their ties or one reason or not, you know?
Right, sure.
But I believe that. Ernie's the smoothest, smart, you know, don't bend up equipment, brings it home in one piece, you know? And I really believe that. So it's now great. He's in my car for the end of the season, and we'll see what, of course, I call him Buddha Belly now because he's been eating all them chickens or whatever he's eating over there. And I said, well, we had to take the, see, I use a big steering wheel like nobody does. I mean, you got a quarter of an inch clearance between my fingers and a cowl. And my cars are all set up, no matter who, Steiner, a few other guys drove the car. I said, I don't know how you steer it. And I said, well, that's part of my little thing that I have with coming off a corner. When you see I do that sidestep between cars, it looks like there's roller skates on a car sometimes. And,
yep.
And I run up, you know, pretty close to the fence. I like it. I feel comfortable up there. But this is part of the hard steering. So now I'm going to have to set it up a little bit easier for Ernie. And plus I had a vibration at the other night that he might have, maybe didn't tell you. And I told him, just take a green flag, let's get some points in the main, and pull it in, which he did. He listened. Yep. And I love that. So now we're trying to make it. I think we go after some owner's points for the rest of the season, I hope.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty neat seeing Ernie behind the wheel of your car.
Everybody likes Ernie.
I think Ernie, one of Ernie's last times out there is when he had that pretty nasty flip
that was
on the
bad.
Front
the
straightaway
last lap.
With Cagle.
Cagle, that's Brandon. See, I'm losing my mind. And now, Cagle had that number one car in a garage. I saw him run it many, many years before that, laying up in St. Pete. And the thing was really getting around. The left front wheel was hanging up, and he was just as comfortable. And Cagle is a good boy. He's another one I love like a brother. You know, you got to like him, you know. And he doesn't go around. He wins. He's not around there poking holes in the air and fireworks going off. A little modesty. I like that.
Yeah.
You know. And Johnny Thompson, I thought, was the greatest driver that ever lived to me. He was turn-the-other-cheek kind of guy, you know. And I could be that to a point, but don't back me in the corner then, you know. I'm Jimmy Cagney then, so but he
top of the world, Ma.
Yeah, he was Cagle was fantastic, and that, like I say, I had the three car, and Cagle drove it, and then I got the number one car, which was Cagle's laying in a garage. He decided to quit racing, and laid in the garage. I couldn't find it, and I wouldn't tell anybody where it was because it was light. I seen him get around. I said, that's a good car. Whatever happened to it? I tried to find it. I couldn't find it. But I was afraid to ask anybody. I figured they'll buy it, you know?
Right.
So finally, just by through a girl, Rode, it was the secretary down there, she says, why don't you look in a phone book? I said, why don't you look in a phone book? You live where he used to live. And she looked in a phone book. She said, I got his number. And I went up there, and he said, I'd like to sell it, but I don't want to sell it to anybody. He said, I'll sell it to you. I think you'll make it work. So he put the motor back in and stuff, and I brought it back, and I won the championship with it in 201. And then 202, we took that out. We went to the Suzuki. And then Kegel won in 203 and 204 with driving his own car that he built. And the number three, he drove that a lot. And then 05, I won it. And then 07, 08, Ernie won. Then I won it in 2009 again. And I was hoping this year, but that's the way it goes. And I can't win them all. So.
Well,
and if I walked away now, I don't really think I have to be ashamed of anything. So,
well, I hope not. I want to see you race again.
Cool.
I mean, I've really thoroughly enjoyed watching. You were talking.
I'm going to go out. If I feel funny when I get up there real close to the fence, like I like to run, or going deep, if somebody comes under me and I jump in a seat or something, you wouldn't have to tell me it's time to walk away, you know, and I wouldn't be ashamed of it.
But, if you don't feel you have the sharpness.
Yeah, I'm not gonna. You know, I don't want to sit up in front of Charlotte County down there, you know, selling pencils and going, hey, you should have seen me in Charlotte one time. You want to buy a pencil? I'm not really looking forward to that. You know, getting knocked off. I don't want to sound like Hollywood, but, you know, sometimes when I was down or with a girlfriend or whatever, and I'd say, you know, maybe the best thing ever happened, a bad crash last week, you know, and everybody be over, you know, done, forgotten, better than wasting away in a wheelchair. But I'm not playing Joe Hollywood, and I don't mean for people to take that the wrong way. But I don't relish the idea of going up there, and I don't feel sharp and saying, well, I finished sixth today, but I was having fun. It's not fun to me. Of course, it's fun. I enjoy it. But in the sense that you probably can understand a different scenario, it's not fun to me running sixth or seventh. I want to be competing for first or trying to win a championship. Otherwise, there's no point in it for me.
That's kind of like what I was talking about earlier. I mean, I've watched your race for so long down here at Charlotte, now the Punta Gorda Speedway.
Right.
And it was like every single lap, you ran it like it was the last lap. And then when it got around with about five laps to go, no matter where you were on the track, it looked like, you know, you just kicked in the afterburners and had little bit extra. Mm-hmm. And
I didn't quit. I never gave up.
I don't know how many times I jumped off of my chair in the tower going, how'd he do that? Where'd he come from? He's right there. And, you know, at the end of several races.
I remember on a tape,
races,
which I wanted to get some copies of, with the, you know, you said, one to go, white flag lap, right? And I got Teddy that night. But I had planned, you know. I planned, like, the Winter Nationals, that kid from Indiana.
Yeah.
The kid was super. What a drive. And everybody, when he was out there winning the heats and warming up and stuff, he said, it's all over. I made a tire change. I got a tire down here from Indiana. I changed the gear ratio and stuff. And I said, I ain't going no place with what I got. And I had him, you know. And I shouldn't have stuck the wheel in there the lap before. I should have waited till the last fourth corner when I knew he would get careful. And that's exactly what he did. I saw on a tape. I would have had him. But, you know, he was no dummy. When I stuck the wheel in him, he was smart enough to know that I wouldn't run into him. And,
right.
So I put the brakes on, and, you know, I backed out. Then it was all over. I couldn't catch him in two laps. Now, the other night with the bad wreck there, that didn't look as spectacular as some other. When I rolled that number three car at Auburndale 10 times, just rolled and bounced and flew around, and I was out in Hialeah. I had a bad one come down, the cage hit on a concrete wall there, and it broke the cage and cracked my helmet, and I was out. But this thing here that didn't look so bad, that was the most violent thing I ever had. Down there, sure. It was like,
really?
I felt like an egg beater was trying to throw me out of that thing, and everybody said my head was flying around, looked like one of them bobble dolls, and it was so violent. I could feel my fingers trying to come out of the sockets, and every place I was hurt before, it's trying to come apart. It was so violent. And then when I sat down, and somebody came over, and they said, you okay? Is your neck okay? And I said, my neck don't hurt. But I said, but turn the car right side up. And they said, it is right side up. So I said, well, I think something's wrong.
Yes.
That was a little,
that
little
was, yeah, I talked to Safety Chris about that, and he said you'd rung your bell pretty good. They were worried about you heading home.
But I didn't want to go to hospital there, you know, and I should have. But, you know, I towed all the way down there alone. Nobody wanted to go. I didn't have any crew, no help. So I towed down there myself, and I didn't want to be, where's my car and trailer going to go? And everybody was busy there, scarce crews himself. And then, so I threw it in a trailer, and I drove it home.
The hell with the hospital. I got to worry about my car.
Car.
Yeah, well, I've
car
had
and my trailer.
I knew what I had. You know, I've had them before, you know. Yeah, but this one I was a little worried because starting to get a little palpitations like there, you know. But it was shock. I had a little shock as well as the concussion. So the next day I went to the hospital. They put the wires all over, you know, and stuff. And everything was okay, but just actually it was pretty good because the nurse wasn't bad, and I saw three of her.
There he goes with them girls again. Besides racing, besides racing getting you in trouble at any point in time, have the women gotten you in any trouble at any point in time?
Well, actually, I'll be off color again. I had sex three times in my life. I had three daughters.
That's good.
No. I go out with somebody now and then, you know, I just don't care just to go out for companionship, you know. And so, you know, I can't be choosy right now. Who the hell wants me at my age? But so I go out and I date, you know. And I like girls because way back at one time when I was younger, I liked girls when I discovered they weren't boys. So so now I do pursue that some.
Oh, all right. That's pretty cool. That's good stuff.
But there was... like I said, a yellow pad over there, and it's time to think a little bit because I added up, I think, from the toes to the head, not to mention other things that people have, you know, internal problems, this and that, and the tumors. I won the roof of my mouth last February. I ran that winter national race with the roof of my mouth down, and they sewed it back up, took a tumor out up there. And so all these other things that people have, you know, I had. But I really would have added up the other day, and it would have filled up a yellow pad, you know, with 30 hospitals, and sometimes I should have been in there. And sometimes I think my head was like one of them frying pans on New Year's Eve with the ball on each side they shake. But most of it back when we didn't have the protection gear we have now. So I'm not playing Joe Hollywood or something, but I'm just stating facts that it was there. And it does, the other day when I was hurting and my hand was hurting, and this fellow here that's here tonight, David Dahlstrom, is a very close friend of mine, and he's bailed me out with this lawn business. You know, I still do when I'm feeling good. I do 40 houses a week by myself. I have no help. And so that perhaps, I think, riding that mower with the two handles and just sitting there looks like an electric chair, you know. I think that hand-to-eye contact might very well have a lot to do with keep my reflexes where they are, you know, with the racing too. And makes working sense. A weed eater, my arms are moving and it keeps the blood flowing. So, and it's forced exercise. And I even get paid for it. Of course, I don't make a lot anymore. But he's come out and he's been helping me fantastically, and I really appreciate it. Without him, I would have lost the business. So when I get this cast done, I'll still have a business to go by. Right now, I'm in a red. Of course, got to pay him. I only pay him $42 an hour cutting grass. You know, right?
Yeah,
that's cool.
Well, I saw you pull in today. As soon as he got out of the car, I says, "You're riding with that guy? You're brave."
Yeah, but I had all of them. Because the doctor said 10. No, he said, you've had a concussion before. I said, "Yeah." He said, "How many did you have?" I said, "More than you had headaches." He goes, "That's not possible." I said, "No." I said, "Well, I lost count of 10, you know, way back, but that was somewhere minor, of course, but still some, you know." He got mad, and he said, you know, no more hits in the head. So the other day when I was hurting, some other things hurt down there, too, that I haven't talked about or mentioned about, you know. But I hit my head on a kitchen cabinet or something, you know, I start yelling and saying, I don't want to hurt no more. I got to tell you the truth. I'm really tired of being hurt. Yeah. I think I've hurt. I'm exaggerating, but... on a ratio of, I don't know, whatever it may be, I think I've hurt more days in my life than I've felt good. Between the racing, high school, I was a pole vaulter, even though I was small, and a pole broke, I came down on the concrete, and that hurt me for a long time. Football, I was the littlest guy. I mean, have you seen a helmet running down the sideline with shoes under it? That was me. I was the smallest guy. Beat up, you know, hit in the head with a brick, walked through a ballpark one time. I'm wondering, here comes a baseball right in the mouth. Knocked my teeth, and I took them out of my tongue, and I tightened up, you know, and wrecked Staten Island and wrecks and wrecks. So, frankly, I don't know. I'm dwelling on this because it's pretty hard to walk with it, you know, walk away from it. It's just been everything, you know. Just been everything to me.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
I still think I got a couple of shows left in me. Of course, we'll know the next time I climb in it. If I don't feel good, that's it. But I got something that's bothering me down there at that track today. If we still ever run there again, I don't know what's going to happen.
When do they come back down there? Do you know?
Fourth.
The fourth. Coming up on the 4th.
October the 4th?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
So Ernie will be in the car. What's going to happen next year, I don't know.
I got to see Ernie.
But I would like to. I got his number in my cell phone in the corner. Yeah. But I don't know. If I don't feel sharp, that's it. You know? I don't know. But I don't know what's going to happen down there. So, but I got a couple of things that I. You know, every year I say I'm going to quit. I had it, you know. I said it back when we had a 50th party for me. And now it's 60 years, and I say, I don't know. I remember at the party for the 50th, the elders was there, and he said something, and I said, something about, I don't know. But anyway, when I retire in about 12 years, so I got two to go yet. So I'll see what happens.
Jack, it's been an honor having you down here. I appreciate you coming down here and letting us talk to you and everything. One question before we go, yeah. Has it felt like 60 years?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. People have asked me, you know, would you do it again? Frankly, no. It's been a tough business. I forget the hurting part. I feel if you're going to race and you're going to get someplace and you're going to be any good, you're going to do some sheet time. And you have to accept that. A guy said to me the other day, why don't you get out and support a kid in it? Get somebody started. I said, I'm going to tell you something. I never missed a show in all those 60 years. Hurt, sewed up, beat up. Hurting in the heart a couple of times where a doctor couldn't fix it. And it makes me get a little funny now because it meant a lot, okay? But I still raced. I never left with a man that cried over his woman. Never. They don't know they go through it. But I said to this guy, it has to be number one with him. A.J. Foyt would never say, I had fun out there today and finished seventh.
Right.
Okay? And neither will Tony Stewart. You can't put a collar around Tony. That's a tough man, another A.J., all right? And I met Tony, I know you're running out of time here, but I met Tony years ago. He had braces on his teeth. I think his arms were as big as a broomstick. And he came down here, Larry DeWinger brought him down, and he was getting started at TQ's. And he said, he was over there, and Larry DeWinger introduced me to him. He said, this is Tony, he's good up in Indiana, and he's getting started. I said, yeah. So he had shorts and white sneakers on, and a T-shirt, and a braces on his teeth. And I said, hey, Tony, you're going to drive a race car, you're going to play tennis. Now, I happen to be a real tennis fan. I really am a tennis nut, believe it or not. You know, people say, you drive race, how can you like tennis? People don't realize, 3.5 hours out there in the sun, comes down to the last ball, a twist of the ankle, a twist of the wrist, and a pressure. They don't realize that. It's really something. And I like Martina Hingis was my favorite, and mostly because she was better looking than Tony Stewart.
It was back to those girls.
She was better looking than Tony Stewart. So I like women's tennis, okay? But I said, Tony, you're going to play tennis or you're going to drive a race car? I said, you know where I come from up there? You come out with white shorts and sneakers. Well, I don't know. So he says, they think you're not going to drive a race car. So anyway, I won it that night. It was at Lakeland. And I think he got a second or third. Next time he came down, he won it. So now, I was down at Hialeah a few years ago, walking around. I yelled over the fence, you're going to play tennis? He goes, I can't say the words, but Duffy, So when I went up, I ran indoors at the Fort Wayne, and then at the Hoosier Dome, and I went up with the little three car, and I won the heat. And Tony had two TQs in a race, and Tony comes walking over there to me, give me a shot in the belly. He wasn't fooling around, and he had an old motorcycle jacket on, raggedy jeans, you know. And he said, "You can't come up here and kick our tail." And I said, "I just did it, didn't I?" He says, "Well, you're not going to do it in the feature, you know." And people was all there, and then he was putting seatbelts on a full midget, which he won the full midget show that night. And I got a went from 21st to the fourth or fifth with the little number three car. Guy came out of infield, spun, and hit me, and that was the end of that. I think I was going to win that. But Tony was over there putting the belts in his car and the chain link fence, and everybody's standing. He came over and put his arms around me, you know, and meant a lot. You don't forget. Tony may be hard nosed sometimes, but I'll tell you something. That guy'll do anything for you.
That's cool.
Yep, he's got a heart, Tony.
Well, and you
got
to want to, you know, no matter what.
I wouldn't have to. So this guy said to me, "Why don't you put a kid in there?" And I told you this other story about how many, when I drove and sick in the heart and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I told this guy, I said, "You know, guy's going to have to want to do it. It has to be number one in his mind. Absolutely number one, because you're going to get hurt out there. Sooner or later, you're going to get hurt. It can't be sliding across the carpet floor to the couch like sliding into second base. It can't be shooting the baskets in a hoop on a garage door. You can do that too. Number one's the race car. Number one, I want you coming here on Saturday. You had a fight with your girlfriend, right? Too bad. Green flag comes down. That's number one. And I was the worst with the women. Really. I was always in love with somebody, always hurt, this and that, you know. But I can't have it. The guy's going to be absolutely number one in his mind, or he's not going to sit in my car.
I have seen at least a half dozen kids that were really good at 12, 13, 14, and all of a sudden the girls came into their life, and it was like they lost it all. I've seen that a half dozen times.
They discover girls. They escape. Yeah. First it's the escape wagon, a car, and then comes the girls. If you got a blue convertible, you got it made, right? But, you know, $100 bill sticking out of your eardrums today, rolled up. But I'm exaggerating, of course, you know. I rubbed the tail of an orphan houser up there, you know, the headrest on it, and it's like magic. I get goosebumps and I can feel it. And when Johnny Coy taught me this crossover thing I do down there, you know, and just missed their back bumper a half an inch, and he told me how to do that, and he sat there, and he came over to me one day, and he said, "Look at the way you sit in the car." I said, "Yeah." He said, "You're a jerk," because Johnny didn't talk like that, you know. And taught me the way I sit in the car is a little different than most people, and there's an advantage to it, and there's an advantage to why I run a windshield, and he always did, and lots of things that he taught me, you know. But number one on your mind, or you're not going to sit in my car. It's that simple.
Racing fuel in the veins.
Now, Ernie has, you know, I know what he can do, we had to take the big wheel off and put a small one on because he looks like a Buddha, a happy Buddha. And so, anyway, I think he's going to be okay and see what we can do the rest of the year, you know. So we'll see what happens.
Can't wait to see it.
That's, October the 4th, you said?
October the 4th, at Punta Gorda Speedway.
I don't think he's going to beat the 26 car. Whatever he's got there, he has. And I know I can beat him, and combination, but putting it together is almost impossible. So anyway, it's been a long time coming for Louis. You know, 10 years, 12 years, been beating around. When I won a championship in 2001, I got to give him credit. He treated my car like it was his own. He'd come to my house on Tuesday nights, yanked the motor over because I said, I think the oil pressure was down a little bit. Put it together. I mean, gung-ho. That championship in 2001 wasn't for Louis, I wouldn't have won it. And it's been a long time coming for him, and I'm going to be very happy to see him win the championship this year. And Teddy deserves a pat on the back. He's a really good driver, a sharp heads-up driver. I think he's going to make it.
Well, Jack, we want you to get well real soon. We want to see you back behind the wheel. And I tell you what, folks, if you've never seen Jack Duffy drive a car, get on YouTube, look at some of the shows from Charlotte with the TQ Midgets, and you need to check Jack out. I mean, he is definitely through and through a true racer and a true gentleman, and just thanks for the entertainment over the years. And good luck to you, and get better, bud. Seriously.
Thank you for having me here. It's my pleasure.
Thank you, Jack. It's absolutely a treat, man.
Oh, my goodness. Another show over, Jack?
Inside Florida Racing.
Man, if you guys want to have some fun this weekend, come see me at the Dirt Track in Hendrick County. It's the United Dirt Late Model Challenge Series and Open Wheel Modifieds and much, much more. 2 days of racing. I'm out.
Inside Florida Racing. You're really going to have it all when you do the St. Pete Boogie. You're really going to have it all. The south side of town, yeah, in some hole in the wall. I got to do the St. Pete Boogie. I'm gonna jump until I fall. I've got to do the St. Pete Boogie. I'm gonna jump until I fall. Bar hopping and high topping. Hey, Lord, can't you hear me call?
Doing this.